Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop, and hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Derek Osgood, founder and CEO of Ignition.
Inherently, the thing that people are in their head assuming is the primary thing they're going to drive is efficiency and time savings. However, like once they have implemented all of that stuff, the value that they really start seeing is now suddenly we have more effective launches. Now we're breaking through the noise more, and they're basically just seeing, you know, higher revenue performance from the launches that they're creating.
This is Derek. He's a former marketing exec turned founder. Prior to founding Ignition, he was an early hire at Rippling, where he stood up the product marketing function and helped scale the company to 20 million in ARR. As a product marketing leader, everywhere from startups to major brands like PlayStation, Derek has launched over 100 products, and his products have generated over 1 billion in revenue. In February 21, he decided it was time to build a platform that he had wished all the way along, and founded Ignition. Its mission? To launch every product to otherworldly success through world-class strategic marketing and to boldly go where no marketeer has ever gone before. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Derek to my podcast. We explore what's broken in the product launch process and how this is hurting businesses. Derek takes us on a journey of how he has built a company and shares the critical lessons that he learned. He explains what difference positioning has made and how important it has been to nail the essential details in marketing and product to grow momentum. By listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, what to do differently to increase the success of your product launches. Secondly, why classic Silicon Valley thinking sometimes work counterintuitive to break through. Thirdly, how to avoid getting sucked down into a rabbit hole of undifferentiated stuff. And fourthly, why our messaging is often 180 degrees different from what it needs to be, and how to avoid that. Well, hi Derek, thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, excited to chat.
Indeed. Yeah. Now, when I got someone reached out to me, and when I saw the introduction to your company, I had to smile, first of all, because being in a role where we used to release a lot of products, and I can actually say we got better and better without typically the tools to have. So yeah. Maybe that's a remarkable little thing in itself, but it has felt chaotic. So, and looking at your website, that's exactly what you saw. So, yeah, I love to have you here. And I think everybody that's listening to this podcast, to listen with intention. So before we start talking about your company, Ignition, a little bit about you. What drives you? Where do you get energy from?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like I just kind of like the build. And the reason that I actually got into originally being a marketer was that I really enjoyed, you know, building brands and like building the outward facing world of a company or a product, you know, from the ground up. And I think now like that I'm starting a company, it's, you know, really the building of products, which is a whole different game, but it's, you know, a lot of similarities. And I think what I just really enjoy is taking something that's in my head and then turning it into something that's real and like actually building, you know, something that's meaningful and valuable to folks.
Right words there, meaningful and valuable. And I'll talk about it later. So you started this company in February 21. Maybe the ideas already started a little bit earlier. I mean, you just told me about your history in the banking world and launch startups. But what was the problem that you saw that made you decide, okay, it's now or never?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, I think Ignition, realistically, like I've been a product marketer and a product manager, you know, throughout my career, and I've launched hundreds of products, features, campaigns, events. Like, And the introduction process of new things, whether it's a product, whether it's feature, whether it's campaign, like it has just always been extraordinarily inefficient at every single company I've been into. And there's actually like a lot of problems that like fall within that. You know, one, it's just chaotic and messy and communication breaks down very, very easily across all the different teams. And every team in the company needs to be really tightly coupled and really well enabled in order to be able to effectively promote the launch and execute on it. And that just always falls apart. You know, companies never have a good repeatable motion for it. So it's just incredibly hard to actually like, you end up reinventing the wheel every time you launch stuff. And information just ends up so siloed and fragmented within the organization that it's very, very challenging for anybody to actually have a clear picture of what is going on, even if there is like a clear plan that has been attempted to be communicated internally. So, you know, I think there's a bunch of problems like additionally that companies just, they don't have time to do research and they don't have the tooling in place to be able to effectively like infuse insights into their launch process. So they end up launching stuff that nobody needs, or they end up launching stuff and having ineffective messaging because they haven't done any message testing on it. So there's a lot of problems within launching, but ultimately, you know, my realization that it was the right time to go start something was just that I had been through this process so many times and every one of these problems was consistent at companies large, small, medium-sized, in CPG, in consumer-facing businesses, in B2B-facing businesses. Like, it was always the same. And I just knew that this was something that needed to be fixed.
Yeah. What is the opportunity if we get this right?
Hopefully, it's a really big multi-billion dollar opportunity. You know, my view is that almost every company except for services businesses are launching things. And even services businesses are still launching, you know, campaigns and events and stuff. So it touches every company on the planet. I think it's a consistent problem at every company. It touches both the top and bottom line of a company because top launches, when they go wrong, are extremely expensive, inefficient processes that cost a lot of money internally, as well as just in terms of like customer churn. And, you know, if you get them right, they can be real revenue drivers for your company. And they're really one of the most effective ways to like break through all the noise that's out in the market and compete effectively. So my view is that this is one of the most fundamental problems that you can solve for any given company. It's also one of the hardest to solve. So that's why it's potentially a very large opportunity for us. But I don't like to, you know, peg market sizes to these things.
No. I'm typically looking at the customer side. You know, when you start to embrace the Ignite solution, what will you typically see as the biggest improvement? And I think you covered that fantastically. Yeah, and that is a very, very large market. And no need to kind of mention a number. Let me see. Yeah, what are the alternatives? What are people using today that's not fit for it? I could, for example, I'm even using these task management type of tools, Asana and Trello or Excel.
Yeah, more often than not, we actually see, you know, like our audience tends to be primarily like product marketers. And oftentimes, because the role of launching things is so cross-functional, they actually are doing this in a spreadsheet, even if their company has a task manager like Asana or their product team is using Jira. And the reason is that oftentimes the product team is using one set of tools and the go-to-market team, like the customer-facing teams, are using another set of tools. So the product marketing team kind of sits in the middle and they have to create their own process in a spreadsheet because they don't want to go jump back and forth between those other teams' tools. Yeah. And I think spreadsheets are like the most common thing that people are using to track the work. You often do see project management tools like Asana and Trello. You see documentation tools like Notion, Coda, actual PowerPoint presentations. There's a lot of elements to this because launches consist of not just you're tracking the tasks, but you're also documenting the strategy. You have to manage all the assets that are created in the process. You have a bunch of point solutions being used for conducting research. So you have like competitive intelligence tools like Clue and Crayon. You have surveying tools like SurveyMonkey. And all of those things are being kind of hodgepodge and cobbled together in order to run this process, which is where all the fragmentation comes from. It's what creates the chaos, and it's what creates the information silos that reduce the effectiveness of all the teams across the company. So we're kind of like bundling all that stuff together so that it's in one place.
Yeah. It makes me go to my next question. Like on that journey, you've been on that journey now for 2 years, almost. Mm-hmm. Knowing all these tools available already and people are still doing it. I mean, people have been launching for decades, more longer than that. Where do you start? What is that first thing that you say, okay, with this particular thing, we're going to make the difference?
Yeah. So it's funny because the original MVP of the product was, and this continues to be, you know, our probably fan favorite feature, is the original MVP was really built around how do you take a launch plan, which is typically kind of broken into pieces, right? So you have, you know, your positioning, you have your messaging, you have your assets that are created, you have your objectives, but each team within the company actually needs a different set of those pieces. Like the sales team needs to know the messaging and the assets available. They don't really care as much about the positioning strategy or the KPIs or like what the channel strategy is. So the original product was really centered around how do you communicate that stuff outwards to those teams really easily in the places that they are. And so what we did was we built, you know, basically a modular document, which allowed you to push bits and pieces of the launch plan to different teams through email and Slack. So that has continued to be like one of the favorite things in our product forever. But one of the things that we learned as we were kind of like going into the market and actually starting to socialize this with customers and get people on board to the platform is like, in order to solve this problem, and I think this is the reason that this problem has not been effectively solved to date. In order to solve this problem, you actually can't take the like classic Silicon Valley, you know, find a like narrow wedge and wedge yourself in with one part of the problem and then gradually expand over time. You actually need to take a platform approach and you need to build across the entire stack. And so that's what we've done, is we basically built out a platform that encompasses all of the launch process and allows you to do everything end to end. And so that's kind of like how we've evolved over time as we've been building this. You know, but our original wedge was really around communication, because that's where this stuff breaks down. Is the reason companies fail at this is because of poor alignment across cross-functional teams.
Completely agree. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's an interesting thing that you say, that the traditional approach of start small and then kind of go left, go right, beyond the expand your minimum viable product, but still deliver more and more and more value. There's a lot of people that have been recently on my podcast that have said exactly the same around, we need the full platform, which of course takes time and extremely expensive to get there, because what are the edges of the platform? So what has been the toughest decision that you had to make on that journey so far?
Well, I mean, the toughest decision, you know, like really didn't have anything to do with the product. I mean, ultimately, like had a downturn, we made the hard decision let a couple of people go. And yeah, that's like every company across the board is doing that right now, unfortunately. But that was easily the hardest decision that we've made from a personal level. But I think, you know, from a product level, I think the hardest decisions have just consistently been all of the ones where we're trying to figure out like what is the next thing that we need to build into this big sprawling process. And so we try and tap in really tightly into customer feedback to drive those decisions. But you know, there's a certain limit to how much you can really glean on like what is really the right thing to build next. I don't think there's ever been a wrong answer there, because all of these things are valuable and all of these things are useful. And yeah, like we need to solve for all of them eventually. So the sequencing is a little bit less important than what we're actually building. But yeah, it's, you know, just been a series at these early stages. It's like everything is just a series of hard decisions. There's the almost everything is really a tough one.
Well, I mean, kind of going back on that, would you have done anything differently up to now?
Yeah. So basically, like, I think if we would have done anything differently, like I probably would have spent less time building the task management tooling that we did. We kind of allowed ourselves to get sucked down that rabbit hole by some of our early users. And it was very important to them to be able to like track the work that was going on in the go-to-market process and like basically replace their task manager. But at the end of the day, that stuff is fairly undifferentiated. There's lots of other tools that you can use that are really good at task management. And like we ultimately are probably not going to ever be a better task management tool than a company that's all they're doing, you know, all day, every day. And I kind of wish that we had shied away from that a bit, because despite the fact that it was very customer driven in the decision to go build that, it ended up burning a lot of time for us that, you know, we probably could have been spending on some of the more differentiated stuff that we've since built that is much, much more unique to us and valuable relative to some competition out there.
Yeah, that's what I was alluding to in the first question. Yeah, how do you make those decisions? Where do you start? And indeed, where do you draw the line? What are we partnering for? And what is really the code that's about how we create defensible differentiation?
Yeah.
And I've been in that same rabbit hole as well. You think you do the right thing for the customer and something that just drags on and on and on.
Yeah.
And not even have launched it, indeed. So then you go to market with your hopefully your own tool. You launch it. What have you learned in the sales process around this?
I mean, we definitely have learned the buying process for this is far more cross-functional than we had originally assumed in our original research. So, you know, I think like we have built the product in such a way that an individual solo product marketer or solo product manager can get a lot of value out of it, in part because of the ability for you to push information outwards. But, you know, I think we've discovered that regardless of the fact that you can use it and you can get value out of it as a single team or a single person, because this process is just so cross-functional, the buyers, they really want to build a lot of internal consensus across all of these teams before they go and make a buying decision. It definitely creates a more challenging sales process for us because we have to like roll in more stakeholders. You know, we have to be able to communicate value across not just the teams that are actually like doing the work on a day-to-day basis, but also the ones who are going to then have to consume all the information. And so I think that's probably been the biggest learning. So, and that has a bunch of like cascading learnings too. It's like we learned that our sales cycles are a little bit longer than we expected because we have to go through this process. And we learned that we need to, you know, up our pricing a little bit because the ACVs need to line up with the sales process. And so a lot of like downstream impacts of that as well. But fundamentally, I think that's been the biggest learning for us.
So there isn't something like getting your foot into the door and start like with a smaller footprint and then grow from there, like spilling the oil, how do you say that? No, maybe that's a Dutch word for that. But anyway, grow it from the inside.
Yeah.
You don't do that.
We try. I mean, like land and expand.
Land and expand, yeah.
We definitely do that with some accounts. But, you know, I think we just have experienced that a lot of companies, and ultimately, like that is the buying, that is the way that the rollout process works, is typically we will start with the product marketing team or the product team, and we will onboard them. They'll start using it. And then gradually they'll start bringing in other collaborators throughout the process. But we just have discovered that like when people are committing to an annual deal up front, typically they're wanting to at least get like implicit buy-in from all the cross-functional teams before they do that. And we do have an organic like freemium model as well. So we definitely have customers where they have come in, they have signed up, they've started using it with one person or one team, and then gradually like started to socialize it and buy it that way. So, you know, it's a bit of both, but
I would expect that is a very good motion to have. You know, it's to get some fans earlier on that then become your advocates and spread it throughout the organization. But on the other hand, this is really a tool whereby from the outset, everybody needs to be aligned on that approach.
Yeah.
For a lot of organizations, if you're top down and then really hierarchical, it's a really, really tough thing.
Yeah. And like the thing that we really drive is, you know, we drive process improvement. And like anytime you're doing process change, you want to make sure that that is communicated and followed by all those people that are touched by that process. Yeah. It does take a bit of change management, which is like painful. It's a little bit like taking new medicine as a company, but the impact of that is so big that if you get it right, it's worth the like kind of thrash that you have to go through to get the process implemented in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. What was the moment where you started to feel the tipping point? Have you come to that point yet?
I mean, there's obviously like multiple inflection points that happen throughout a company's life. You know, I think we've had a couple of them. I mean, honestly, the last couple of months have felt like a bit of one of those inflection points where we basically like, because we built so much product and we built it so fast, there were definitely for most of last year, and like we were in beta, so, you know, that was to be assumed, but for most of last year, there were a lot of like small little frustrating UX elements that, you know, were just like polish issues that we hadn't had a chance to go and smooth over. And I think, you know, in the last couple of months, we basically like kind of slowed down on net new product development and basically focused a lot on onboarding, polishing the stuff that we already had. And I think that has paid huge dividends. And we've seen, you know, a ton of deals closing in the last couple of months. We've seen a lot more usage, and we've seen generally a drastically better reception to the product, in part because like all those little minor frustrations have been solved and hammered out now.
Let me make a small interruption here. Derek just made an important remark about what's been essential to drive momentum. Move the product from good to remarkable, and that makes all the difference. Often we're almost there. Functionality-wise, we've done the job. But with that, we've often only repaired a hole, but didn't create a peak. Smoothing out the process is important, and that starts with repairing holes, correct? But what makes something remarkable is when we create peaks of experience when it matters most to our users. And that's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. they master the art of curiosity to uncover those moments where they can introduce their peaks and deliver on that. And that's noticed. And momentum is the gift back. And you can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark in the next 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
I think the product was always powerful, but now it's both powerful, delightful, and easy to onboard to.
What made the difference in that process? What was the biggest thing that added to that? Or is this like across the board, a lot of small things?
Honestly, it was the accumulation of lots of small things, but I think it was ultimately about us like making the conscious decision to like focus on polish and onboarding and say, hey, look, like we've built most of this, all the building blocks are there. There's definitely things that we want to build to continue to improve the functionality of these new features, but we just need to spend some time, like now that we've built all this stuff and the information architecture has gotten a little confusing because we were gradually building this over time, you know, let's like take a step back, reassess how people are onboarding to the product and go and just attack that problem specifically as a company and orient the whole organization around it for a period of time.
Yeah, makes it a lot more scalable. But you already touched upon downturn and a couple of people had to go, which are, of course, are really, really tough decisions. What are people actually buying when they invest in Ignition? Because you can look at it from two sides. You can, on the one side, say, okay, it's going to be much more effective and driving the cost down in the organization and stop all the errors. And the other side, it could also be it's going to help us succeed more, drive top line. So what is, for the customer, the real driver for kind of to sign the deal?
Yeah, I think the way that they're typically thinking about this is, I mean, ultimately it's process improvement, which tends to be focused on the kind of like efficiency side of things and like how much time can we save on building this process and like how much better can we communicate this stuff. So the three like value buckets that I think people are typically looking to solve for are building more repeatability into their process, building more transparency and visibility for all the cross-functional teams into the process, and building better lines of communication and being able to like more effectively communicate internally. Yeah. I think all of those things, like they inherently, the thing that people are in their head assuming is the primary thing they're going to drive is efficiency and time savings. However, like once they have implemented all of that stuff, the value that they really start seeing is now suddenly we have more effective launches. Now we're breaking through the noise more. We are better coordinated. We're making better use of all the channels that we have available to us internally because more teams are involved in the process effectively. And they're basically just seeing, you know, higher revenue performance from the launches that they're creating. Yeah. It's like they think they're buying efficiency and like calming down the chaos that's involved in their process. But what they're really getting is they're getting a new revenue lever and a better driver of ongoing revenue for their company. So, and part of that is like, we're working on telling that story a little better in our sales process as well. As like to date,
very, you know,
we've been much more focused on the kind of bottom line element of it, but we're starting to work a bunch more on telling the story around how do we actually, like, if you want your launches to drive revenue impact, then you really need to be tight on this process. And that's where we add tons of value to your company because suddenly you're seeing 20, 30% better success on the KPIs that you're tracking for your launches.
Do you believe that this, I mean, especially now with the downturn being there, you know, and everything going on in the world, that that becomes your main focus?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, the last thing you want to happen is that people just shut down and say, okay, not now. Call me in half a year.
No, definitely. I mean, that's for sure part of our focus. And I think in a downturn like this, where it is more important than ever to retain and engage your existing customers and like find ways to drive revenue from them, that doesn't decrease the importance of launching things. Like a lot of companies assume that, hey, we're going to slow down on new product development because we had to let go of a bunch of engineers or whatever reason that they're going to stop launching as many new things. And that's fine. But when you do launch those things, you need to be more effective at communicating them to customers because you want to make sure that those existing customers that you have know about it, that you are turning that into cross-sell or upsell opportunity from those existing customers. and that those customers are excited enough about it to then go and evangelize it to other people. Because in a market like this, like word of mouth is the best possible way that you can actually drive new acquisition, because you're not going to have a lot of budget to go spend on advertising or, you know, the other marketing activity that you would otherwise be doing. So I think in general, like this market environment actually increases the importance of getting this stuff right. It doesn't decrease it, which is great for us, but it makes operating in a tricky environment right now.
Exactly. I mean, you need to drive the cost down, but on the other hand, you know, you want to keep the cash flow going as well. That's about revenue coming in.
In case you haven't heard, it's officially an Abercrombie summer. The A&F Vacation Shop has everything on your packing mood board. I desperately need their new one piece, the A&F Marina. It's strapless, so flattering, and paired with denim shorts will be my go-to beach outfit this summer. Finally, your suitcase isn't complete without finding that dress. You know, the one for the photo shoot. Abercrombie's boho dresses have that perfect beachy romantic look. Make it an Abercrombie summer. Shop their newest arrivals in-store, online, and in the app.
What you said, a couple of things that always trigger me. Breaking through the noise.
Yep.
And driving word of mouth. And I'll explain why in a minute. But are there any specific things that you did in the platform in order to amplify that?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like building our own kind of virality and like making it kind of expand itself, there's a couple of conscious decisions that we made. So one is the way that we handle that sharing that I was mentioning, you know, with the email and Slack updates. So we allow you to share these updates both internally within your organization and then also externally. The reason for that is like oftentimes within launch processes, you're dealing with a lot of external resources, you know, contractors, agencies, et cetera. And so when we are doing briefings from our product, it makes it very, very easy for you to communicate to those external partners, which then makes them see the value in it, which then makes them bring it to their other clients. And so, you know, there's some inherent external virality there. We've also made it really easy for users to share public pages for their launch plans, which don't require somebody to have a login, but it does have an ability for that person to go and create an account directly from the public page. So we're trying to make it very easy for people to communicate the value of the platform without us actually having to be involved and help with, you know, that kind of like internal and external virality within the product. So
it's the virality for your product.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So how do you help your customers break through the noise in their markets?
So that's an area where like ultimately the things that we are helping with are one, like helping you to have better insight driven planning. Like ultimately the best way to break through noise is to have really, really quality positioning and have it be really driven by customer insights and be relevant to the people that you're telling the story to. And we have research tools baked into the product that help you to go and conduct customer research, basically like a bunch of best practice based survey tooling. We have competitive intelligence tooling that will help track a bunch of data about your competitors so you can create better mapping against like where your value lies versus theirs. At the actual communication, like Marcom's front and how you're actually communicating this stuff to customers, that's where like we don't really touch it quite as much. What we're doing is we're enabling you as an organization to be better internally enabled and communicate better to your sales team, to your support team, to the cross-functional marketing teams like comms and demand gen. A, know that that launch is coming, which is one of the biggest misses that happens in any organization. And B, know what the strategy is for that launch, have the context on why the strategy is what it is, and know how to go and tackle announcing it. And so we have some co-pilot tools that will help like structure a campaign plan for you. And they'll basically like automatically spit out a recommended set of channels that you should be using to announce this thing to most effectively maximize the impact of it. But at the end of the day, like our customers are the ones who need to do the actual campaign execution work. You know, we can't help you with that. But I think generally, like so many companies just even forget that many of these channels are available to them, and they forget that they should be using them for every single launch. And because of the fact that they are scrambling to plan these things at the last second, they don't have the time to actually effectively build out quality messaging and quality
set.
Yeah.
It is always like the thing that's for the last moment, but I completely agree with you. Music to my ears, you know, positioning is the foundation for this all. And great that your product is actually providing all the insights to do that in a customer-driven way. Cool. Yeah. Well, talking about a couple of the things that I mentioned before, I mean, I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect, which is about the 10 traits that define those software companies that we start talking about and keep talking about, remarkable software companies.
Yeah.
What do you steer for in your business to make sure that people start talking about you and keep talking about you beyond the features that you already mentioned?
Yeah. I think it's tough. It's like, it's a competitive world out there and you constantly have new products popping up that are doing really cool stuff. You know, I think for us, the product's already remarkable. Like, we already have product marketers who are using us today and they're advocating for us in communities and talking about how cool it is. And, you know, I think like a lot of the things that we already talked about are why, but at the end of the day, it's mostly because of how effectively we bundled all this stuff together. So you really do have kind of one central mission control hub where you can do pretty much everything needed around a launch plan.
Nice.
Some of the things that we are exploring to like stay remarkable in a world where, you know, I think there's a lot of remarkable stuff happening right now around AI. And I think we have been exploring that really deeply. One of the coolest things that I think we're working on right now is we're basically looking into how we can use a ChatGPT-like experience in the product to surface to sales teams or to support teams or any of these cross-functional stakeholders who need the visibility into the launch plans, the most effective way to talk about products. So when you think about like companies that have multiple products, oftentimes they have many different launches that contribute to this broader narrative around a holistic product. So in using my old company, Rippling, as an example, it's like we had a payroll product and that payroll product we were launching features constantly for. And so what we're going to allow a salesperson to do is come into the product and say, hey, how do I talk about the payroll product to a finance person? And they'll be able to ask that question in the way that they would to a product marketer. And then we're going to spit out a kind of summarized version of the messaging that takes into account all of those things that you've launched and gives them essentially a sales script. It tells them what the like three or four top assets that they should share with those customers are. And it also explains like what the next three or four things that are being launched in the next couple of months are going to be for that product. So it makes it ultra easy for them to go and get the information they need and communicate that then back to customers.
And be on message, very important. Yeah. I mean, the moment you don't have it, everybody starts to kind of create their own. Yeah, I love that. I love that. Very eager to see it. Okay, well, looking at the time, based on your experience being the CEO of the company and your history being involved in other companies as well, what would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with other aspiring tech entrepreneurs? The thing that you would like to have known before that you know now, what traps shouldn't they fall into? What should actually do specifically?
I think the biggest do is, and this is, you know, cliche, but it's make sure that you've done the validation work up front. Make sure that you have gone and identified that the thing is a real pain point that you're building for, and you're not actually just building something that you think is cool. And, you know, I think it's so easy for first-time entrepreneurs to fall into the trap of like, I really am passionate about this thing. I really think it's cool. And they build something that nobody actually wants. You know, I think that's the biggest do. And, you know, I think we did a lot of that, but we also have it like at times we've gotten a little bit blinded by the fact that I have been in this role that we're selling to before. And so like we'll build things that like I personally think are cool, but we sometimes skip the prototyping step and bouncing those prototypes off of customers. And then, you know, like we run into usability challenges. And so making sure that you are just involving customers every single step of the way as you're building this stuff is the biggest do. The biggest don't, I think, is honestly, I think the biggest don't is like, don't wait. Like as an entrepreneur, it's hard. It's not easy. But I think I wish that I had jumped into starting companies earlier in my career. If it's something that you really want to do, you know, I think there's always going to be an excuse for why it's not the right time to do it. And there's always going to be an excuse for why you're not going to go do it. But if it's what you want to do, like just go out and do it. And like a lot of this stuff, you know, is just figuring out on the fly. And there's a lot of learning. There's no clear one right path and one right way to start a company. And so you just have to go do it. Don't like let fear kind of stop you from going out and chasing it.
Yeah, that's a big one. I heard it a number of times. And in the 5 years that I've done the podcast, actually one ended up in my book itself. But yeah, just start and get going. Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks very much. Where can people go to find out more about Ignition or to say hi to you?
Yeah, totally. So if you want to find out more about Ignition, the website is haveignition.com. And if you want to say hi to me, it's derek@haveignition.com. And, you know, feel free to reach out directly over email. I'm always love hearing from folks who are curious.
Cool. Well, thank you very much, Derek. I really liked the mission that you run and being a product marketeer. from within my career, this is also music to my ears. Glad the solutions out there like this. We should have heard that before, but that's always the case, of course. I keep following you on your track.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is a blast.
Same for me. Thank you. And this ends my conversation with Derek, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on the mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Derek Osgood, founder and CEO of Ignition. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.